This is a place where real masculinity is painfully learned, deeply celebrated, and aggressively deployed. We are committed to training you how to fight the war against all that is fighting you. This is the Dangerous Man Podcast.
What's up, Dangerous Man Podcast? How y'all doing this week? Thank you so much for joining us. What's up, Matt? How you doing, man?
Good. A good day today.
I'm super excited, dude. Super excited. Yeah. Why? Why am I excited today? Come on!
This is probably, I would say, one of your favorite authors.
Definitely one of my favorite authors. Probably one of the most incredibly transformational books that I've read in my entire 41 years of reading books. It's right up there with John Eldridge's Wild at Heart. We have an amazing guest today. Gentlemen, I want to introduce Michael Thompson, the author of Heart of a Warrior and King Me. Michael, say hello to the guys.
Hey, good to be with Dangerous Men on a... what are we, Thursday afternoon before Easter?
Right before Easter.
Yeah. Right before Easter. Can't think of a better place to be. And we were just talking about the weather, boys. And I'm glad I don't live in New Hampshire, but I'm thrilled that thrilled that you do.
You got so, that.
But it's great to be with you guys, man. Really, really an honor.
Oh, thank you so much, Michael. The honor's all ours. So listen, for the guys listening, Michael, could you just tell them who you are and what you do?
Yeah, Michael Thompson. I have been working kind of in the author and counselor space for about 20 years now. I had a former professional career in professional Christianity, was on staff with the good folks of Campus Crusade, a crew staff member.
Oh, wow.
And before that, you know, college. Was involved in some campus ministry and when I wasn't in the gym playing college basketball. But that's a little bit of backstory, and started Zoe, which is the Greek word for life. When Jesus says, I came that they might have life and have it to the full, that word life is Zoe. And C.S. Lewis writes about it in Mere Christianity, talks about the difference between a bios and a Zoe life. And how Zoe life is this kind of quality and depth and a life with God and a life that that God offers this life to the full. So that's kind of how the name jumped us. You know, we wanted that. We want to be about that. And so I get to be the president or what am I, Caleb? The captain of the militia of
that's a good title.
Zoe, yeah. Well, I was going to finish by saying, but Zoe Knuckleheads, that's us. You know, I think we get to kind of run around the kingdom and help guys either get in a foxhole or find a safe house, get the stuff that they need. We love the idea of encouraging, equipping, and deploying men.
Yes.
And so that's why we write some of the things we do and get to do some of the conferences and stuff that we do. But yeah, finding you guys and you guys finding us, it's really fun, man.
I love it, man. It's a line. So could you share with the guys listening, can you share a little bit about, you don't have to go into a ton of detail, but just like, what is your goal with Zoe? Just so they understand when you're talking about that, like, what is your goal with Zoe and what you guys do through that organization?
Yeah, primarily, but not exclusively, right? We work with men. We work with men, and mostly, kind of on the church side. On the, we might say in church talk, discipleship side, and if the promise or the offer was life to the full, why aren't more guys having that?
Yes.
Why aren't men experience, and I've been one of those men. It's been me. So I love and I'm honored that you mentioned kind of my name in the sentence with John Eldridge. You know, I think he's one of the faculty members of my heart in my heart's journey.
You are a wordsmith, man. Oh my goodness. The faculty member of my heart. My goodness.
Yeah. He's right down the hall C.S. Lewis, man.
Yes. His nice. Office,
you know, and others who, you know, shape us, who have encouraged and educated us on the journey. And so for me, so Zoe really exists to provide the environments and the resources and the relationships to help a man, you know, walk in that fullness he's been. And so at least have a fighting chance, man, you know, to overcome the crap that the enemy has been doing and working at all of a man's life, even when he was a boy. So that's kind of our, the flag that we fly and try to, for the Patriot, you know, when he grabs the flag and runs toward the enemy as men have retreated. And so that's kind of what we love to do is find that battle cry and say, let's go. And then through orientation, which you guys, you know, found in Heart of a Warrior, mm-hmm. an oriented man is a man who is experiencing from God who he is, where he is, and the good God's up to in his life. So that is what we want to be, and that's what we want to offer.
That's awesome. And I love, so here on the podcast, like our main goal, obviously, is it's dangerous men, but being dangerous men means being dangerous for good, obviously. And when you truly, and one of the things I absolutely love, and I want to start getting into just some questions, just about some stuff that you talk about in your book, Michael, and just kind of let that conversation mm-hmm. go a little bit, because mm-hmm. what I'd love for our guys to understand is where their masculinity comes from. You know, mm-hmm. we say all the time, your masculinity is not toxic. It's missing. You haven't discovered it yet.
Yeah, and I love it. Yep.
So, you know, one of the things in just what we are trying to do is helping guys tap into that, knowing where your identity comes from, knowing where your masculinity comes from, knowing how and who can heal you in order to be that, you know, that genuine warrior. Because I think for all of us guys, we're like, yeah, I want to be a warrior. And we get all pumped up and we're like, I'm going to go and kill everything. I'm going to win. Yeah, that's great. But and I love what your book does is it's like, hey, you're skipping a step. Like, you're going out half-cocked and cocky. Like, Kerry Green said that last week, and I was like, dude, I'm stealing that forever. He said, don't go off half-cocked and cocky. Like, you've got some work to do in you. And I think most men would agree, and most of our listeners would agree, is like, we know that we have work to do. And so what I'd like to talk about today is the work that you talk about in your book, The Heart of a Warrior. And so Matt's got a couple of questions I want him to start with.
So just to reiterate kind of what Rory said, and we see men too that we meet on a daily basis and just try and bring them in and kind of trying to meet them where they're at. And they're kind of ill-trained and where are most men today ill-trained warriors?
Yeah, great question. I think throwing that I already threw at you kind of what an oriented man is, it just kind of implies that there's a lot of disoriented men out there. And I'm talking about Christian men. You know, you can be a church-going guy. I found and would even confess, I think I repeated the seventh grade in church for decades. And so, when I began to, I think God began to pull me into this idea of more. That's where orientation and the idea of, I mean, I had a lot of attendance badges, but I was pretty good at service, but I wasn't really good at intimacy. And so, orientation is about, you know, an intimate, the fruits or the benefit, right? The ways of the kingdom that happen when you encounter and experience God in ways that transform you. And it's his love that's supposed to transform us.
That's right.
So when you were talking earlier, Rory, I think it was you about knowing, even that word, I, you're talking about wordsmithing. I try not to use the word knowing mm-hmm. and try to use the word experiencing because there's confusion about, you know, knowing the truth and the truth setting you free. And we've got some biblical literate, not illiterate, biblical, very biblical literate men, but that's not the knowing the truth of the scriptures is important, but experiencing the love yeah. of God in the scriptures we have found is the thing that really can transform you. So being loved by God mm-hmm. is really more important than serving God. You get the one before the other, you probably won't get the other. Like I said, yeah. I think I wrote it, you can serve God and not really be in love with him, but if you're in love with him and he's in love with you, which he is, you know, it's not going to feel like service. That's part of my story.
There was a part in the book where you talked about, and I think this is what you were saying, is there was a part in it. Oh man, it was so good. 'Cause you talked about, it was like the difference between serving the kingdom and being a soldier for it. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
Yeah. That idea that, you know, when the intimacy was, you know, the difference having a king and a cause and knowing him, knowing Jesus, you know, really well versus knowing about him. I mean, you know, you can study all kinds of characters in history and you can learn a lot about them, you know, maybe yep. even you majored in some class or in some degree program. But I think this is about, you know, being able to walk with the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And Matt, I think it goes back to your question a minute ago about, you know, why are so many men ill-trained? I really think it goes back to, we have been generationally, we have been sliding.
Come on.
Into fatherlessness.
Yeah.
And so in the way that God made it, in the economy that he created, in the design, right, it's supposed to be fathering the next generation. So
yeah.
David does that. Solomon collects the Proverbs, and then Proverbs 1, he says, all right, sons, come around. I'm going to teach you the way of my father that he taught me. And that's what the Proverbs are. It's the homeschool curriculum for the Hebrew child in woman's day. And that's how they rolled. So,
well, and one of the greatest epidemics that we're dealing with, and I know you guys deal with this on a daily basis, as you look at the world and the society that we're in, and the greatest epidemic is an epidemic of fatherlessness.
Yeah. And it's been going on long enough that now we're really, really seeing it. I mean, it's not like the last decade. We're really talking about the last 50, you know, and that's how we're feeling the impact of unfinished men, ooh, unfathered, uninitiated men. And so, you know, we think at Zoe that this could be remedied within a decade or so. If there was enough oriented men,
come on,
yep, who were experiencing the love of God as sons of God and, you know, began to experience who they were. Mm-hmm. Graham Cook said it this way: I want to know how I'm known in the kingdom.
Yeah.
You know, you think about war names, or you think about just those affectionate names like a father might have for a son. And what do you go by, you know, in the kingdom? What does he call you? We said something off camera, Rory, about what was it you said? I hope it doesn't stick. It was a name.
Rory the Interrupter. Rory but the let's interrupter, be honest, right? It happens.
that sounds like a Viking name all the way, you know? And so, but how are we known, and what are we known for in our strength and kindness as men? So I think that's, you know, Matt, it's such a loaded question. It's got some really beautiful complexity to it. But I think that's where the great symptom of being ill-trained, you know, the result of being ill-trained is our fathers, our grandfathers, right, you know, generationally, they weren't oriented, then we've got to find that orientation space for ourselves. Right. And if we do, then our children have a chance. And I can remember, you know, working with men the last 25 years, I can remember that day that I talked to my wife. I said, you know, I think we're making ground here with men. I don't want our children to not get this orientation. We've got to bring this
come
home.
On. Yeah.
And so that, you know, that was a good shift about 15, 16 years ago. Now that my kids are 30 and 28 and 25 to enter into, you know, this generational passing along, because we are leaving a legacy. We are leaving a legacy. You guys are younger than me, you're 40s, but you're building it, you know, and it's just, what is it? And it's pretty fragile.
That's right.
It honestly is pretty fragile, you know? And so our sons and daughters need to know a dad who's walking intimately with God.
That's right.
And over time, there is some promises in the scripture about how that will go. So I think that we can like kind of lean into that and hope and trust that, they may go off in the far country like some of us did. And yet they can find their way back, because somehow dad installed and instilled a compass of a kingdom life. And they, you know, like the prodigal sons and daughters, they eventually will want to come home. So that's, I think, you know, one way to move forward in going after this generationally, Matt, because that's what fatherlessness is. It's a it's a generational challenge for sure.
And I think so. One of the things, Michael, that we say on this podcast all the time is we tell guys, stop trying and start training. Like we have wasted away. Like there's so many guys I know, and I was one of them for years and years and years. Like I'm trying to do better. I'm trying to be a better dad. I'm trying to be a better man. I'm trying to chase after God. I'm trying to be a better husband. I'm trying all this stuff. And the reality is you can try all day long, and you're not really going to get all that far. You're going to get overwhelmed. You're not even prepared. You're running off half cocked and cocky because you're just trying to do it all. So we really push that at TDMP, because we're like, listen, the only time you're really going to be the effective man that God's made you to be is when you're training to be that man, you know? Yeah. And so we say it all the time, stop trying, start training. And I know that's a really big thing in your book, is you guys, and in Zoe, is you guys are all about training. Like I'm jealous of the level of training that you are equipping these guys with is incredible. And I think most men, you know, we want to be these things, right? We aspire to be different men and whatnot. And then we just keep trying ourselves into the ground. And it's not effective at all as far as like leadership. It's not effective as far as development. Like we have to have regimented discipline training in our lives. Otherwise, you can try as long as you want. You might as well just go pound sand and lick a brick wall, because it's not going to happen. You're not going to be able to do it.
And it's hard. Because there's I agree with everything you're saying. It was the reason, if you wanted some backstory of, you know, how and why I wrote Heart of a Warrior. Well, I was in the, you know, I was in the, with Campus Crusade and where I was in my career in ministry, man, I was there. I was well trained at servitude, at in ministry, and so what happened after 17 years of that? My heart was dry, and I was thirsty, and so what I did, Rory, was I just did what you described. I thought, well, I need more training.
Yeah.
So I signed up for seminary. I thought, crap, just double down. Let's run some more laps. Let's do some more push-ups and let's go to seminary. And the academic pursuit, if I could learn some more Bible, I'm just telling you, that's how I felt. That's how I really grew and progressed in athletics and academics. You just try harder, you know? So training is absolutely an important element. I am agreeing 1,000%, but if you keep swinging that club, that golf club, without proper encouragement, instruction, you're not going to fix that slice. You can hit 1,000 more balls a day.
Yep.
And try to, so the good news is, I think that the Spirit of God intervened in my life and will in a man's life. And the direction I was heading, God kind of end-arounded me and brought me to a place of healing.
There you go.
From my past. And that was the training that I actually really needed, Rory and Matt. It wasn't lower your shoulder and push in and go forward. If I can look back on that, it was kind of collapse into God, and the things that were very unhealthy in my Christian journey, he began to detox and began to bring relief and really replace the service model with an intimacy model. And that changed so much I want to move the chains. I want a first down.
Right.
I still want to be successful at home and with my friends in the journey, but and it wasn't having a longer quiet time or finding, but it was tied up in some things that I didn't even know existed. Warfare was one of them. I knew there was an enemy. I just didn't know how that worked, which is a great recipe for getting your ass kicked on a regular basis.
That's absolutely legit. Let's go down that road a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's go down that road a bit, because I think, you know, some of the guys listening, I know that they either have father wounds or we all have father wounds, period.
Yeah.
But I know for some of the guys listening, okay, they're like, all right, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Your dad led you out. God led you out. But what about the guys that don't have fathers? Where does a guy who doesn't have a father to lead him, where does that man start, Michael?
That's a great question. And I hope this is not a religious or some kind of a cheap answer, but I would start praying for a father figure. I would start praying for a man, and then I would pay attention, you know, and see if they're, you know, who God might bring along. And you know, I think the elder sages and those men in their 70s and the kings that are, you know, 50s and 60s. I mean, for younger guys, there's not a lot of them, but they're out there and they don't have to have read my book. But I'm saying there's some guys that know a thing or two. And so, but most younger men have been wounded by other older men, not just their fathers. So that's very tall order that I'm throwing out there. But I would say, you know, Rory and Matt, just because again, you guys have been so honoring, man, while you're waiting for that guy, you need to tend to your heart. And I think heart of a warrior and King Me, you mentioned Eldridge, Wicked the Dead or Wild at Heart. I mean, while you're waiting,
that's good.
And I'm a big believer in the kingdom principle that you need to prepare. And that as you prepare for the blessing, do your part, do what you can to tend to your heart. And then I believe when you're ready, God's going to bring you the resources, the relationships that you need. So, you know, again, it sounds a little bit like a commercial for Heart of a Warrior.
But that's the reality.
I think that is a very important beginning. And then, to pray that God would bring another friend, one man that you could go through one of those books with, because that, now you're starting to enter into conversation and you're going to hear another man's story.
That's right.
And again, it's a fragile thing because entering into friendship is where we can get hurt, but it's also where we can find gold, you know, and most men go alone. Most men don't have that guy, older or younger.
No, that's reality.
They're talking with, you know, and that they're really playing this very serious game called life, that they're fighting the good fight with. So I think that's where, you know, I might would invite a man. And, you know, I'm pretty optimistic. So I believe that the resources God has for his sons is pretty extensive. And so get ready, prepare yourself, you know, do what you can for your heart. And like I said, I went to seminary. I was going in kind of a, let's just call it an easterly direction. Yeah. And God comes after me from the north. I'm just saying it was not.
Yeah.
It wasn't, even though I was pursuing something to get this thirst quenched and to get this apathy that I was feeling. I knew that I could do my job in ministry. I just, my heart wasn't in it.
Yeah.
And that's made me go after God, and only to find out that God was going after me as I stepped out into that space.
I think that definitely is a thing that any guy, whether you're a believer or not, I think you can, guys, we can relate to this, is we're all chasing something. And have we even taken a moment to consider what we're even chasing and why we're chasing it? You know, that's one thing I love that your book does, is you're constantly bringing men back to, like, why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you hurting the way you're hurting? Why are you acting the way you act? Like, self-reflective. It's so internal when you guys, like, read his book. If you haven't read this book, The Heart of a Warrior, check it out. We'll post links in the show notes so you guys can get a hold of it. But man, I'll tell you, this book makes you look inside yourself with the most ridiculously brightest mirror you've ever even looked inside yourself. And then what happens is you begin to pick yourself apart, address your wounds. It begins to take you on a journey, guys, that you're already looking for. You just didn't even know that you were supposed to be looking for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so good. So honoring. Because, you know, Rory, as you say that, where I go is with my false self. I was just so
false. That was the next question.
I was just about to ask you. Yeah.
Let's go.
I was so tangled up in this thing that Paul calls the false self or the flesh.
Yeah.
It was really running the show most of the time. And every now and then my true self got out of the trunk and got in the game. And but man, I just think we don't realize. I didn't realize how shaped by the world, how shaped by the whispers and voices of the enemy, which I didn't really know how all that worked. And I'm in my 30s at the time, and I knew there was an enemy. I knew there was a kingdom of darkness. I just didn't know how it worked, and I sure didn't know what they had on me, which naivety and ignorance is just not good for a Christian man at all, for any man. And so I think that's where we tend to focus on sin and not sinning when the real work is upstream in this place where the false self has been formed and the lie.
Before you go into the full story, I just want to add, can you just quickly define what is the false self for the men listening?
Yeah. The false self is what Paul calls the flesh, or Eldridge called the poser, right? I've heard it called the mask or the fig leaves where, so sometimes it's even as close as our personality. You know, we can hide behind, you know, even some of our gifted personality type traits. So the false self, the accumulation of a journey where you were to be loved unconditionally, and yet we figured out early on how to make life work, or at least try to make life not so painful. So when the self is in the center of the story, you know, and things are revolving around that, Matt, then you really, that's kind of how the false self operates: self-protection, self-promotion, self-provision. And we all kind of learn how to do that, you know, back to mother, you said father wounds and mother wounds.
Yep.
So it really, if I was going to really break it down into as simple math as I can, we ask at our conferences, we got to get these guys tickets to the next conference, Caleb. We got to figure that out. See if they can.
Oh, we'll be there. We'll be there.
Frozen tundra, New Hampshire, and come warm up and thaw out. But we ask if you come to one of our weekends early on in the welcome, one of the questions we ask is, so what are the odds, Matt and Rory, what are the odds that you've interpreted your life accurately?
Oof. Here we go.
Okay. So that is.
Are you wanting us to answer that, or is that a hypothetical?
Yeah. I was hoping that was rhetorical.
Matt's like, Rory, what do you think?
400 guys. Yeah, put 400 guys in the room, and the same response you guys just had happens all over the room. It's the wildest, funnest thing. What are the odds that you've interpreted your life accurately? And there's that awkward quiet, and then there's like, God, whoa, you know. And
yeah.
So the reality that if we're confessing that that's true, then that means there's some falsehoods or some lies that we are probably believing, and we're not even sure where they are. We just know we can't raise our hand, you know, and say we've interpreted our lives 100% accurately. So right. We know that there's some level of inaccuracy, falsehoods, or let's go to the extreme and say lies that we might be believing ourselves about God or about others.
Yeah.
And so I'm getting back to answering your false self question and saying that's where the false self is made up. That's the ingredients that comprise a man or a woman's false self is over the journey. Because what you believe matters so much. And if you've believed something that's untrue, and shame and guilt and fear, they offer you contractual.
Oh, yeah.
They offer you contractual agreements that when you sign them, they start to have power and authority in your life, because the whole kingdom, and we've misinterpreted this too, Jesus came to bring the kingdom, and the kingdom has authority. And the kingdom has power. So if you as a believer aren't experiencing power and authority, much less wielding it, you're probably in a POW space, probably captive. I say probably to be nice. You're captive, even though you're a believer.
You're a prisoner. You're a prisoner.
You're subject. The enemy has enough on you, and that's all they need to have on you is that. And you won't do it 5 and 6 days a week, but you might do it one day a week where something happens and you feel like an idiot. And then you sign the contract again. I'm an idiot. I can't. And that kind of frustration doesn't stay contained. It is going to be taken out on somebody. And that's just what the enemy wants to do. Use you to hurt, use others. And it also makes you just so susceptible to be used and hurt by others. So it's not good. Not good. The false self is not good.
So let's get down to brass tacks. Let's get real, because this is a great conversation. So I feel like I need to share something just for you guys listening. When we talk about false self and we talk about these things, so I'll give you an example. When I was in my late 20s, Michael, I went through a marriage that was violently abused outside of the status quo by a woman who was about 110 pounds soaking wet. And I say violently because it was of the extreme nature. I mean, stuff that was putting me in positions where I had plenty of hospital visits on a regular basis. Everybody asking me, I was isolated. It was the most outrageously extreme situation that that I couldn't talk about to anybody because I was like, oh, well, no one's going to believe me that she's doing this to me. And so for 2 years, I made up excuses. I lied to my family. I lied to my friends. I was isolated. I was gone. The enemy had me up against a wall. And I started to believe certain things, certain lies about myself. But one of the things that I didn't realize until actually going through your book, and so I just want to pre-thank you because – it helped me remove this false self that I didn't actually even identify until I actually read your book. And it was what most men would think about. I'm going to say it here in a second, but when I say it, you're going to understand what it was. Most men would think, oh, that's a good thing to be attached to. No, it caused me to do some seriously horrible things because I was attached to the false self. So I made this promise to myself after that abusive relationship. When I finally got out, I was a single dad with a 3-month-old son, and breastfeeding was really hard. But police were involved, and it was just absolutely disastrous. I came out of that, mm-hmm. and I swore, no one will ever abuse me like that again. And I made that promise to myself. And I thought, like, hey, this is a virtuous thing to uphold.
Yeah, I hear where you're going. Yep, go ahead, keep going.
Yeah. So going through your book, I actually realized through the process when we start identifying the heart wounds and who hurt you and writing their names down and all that stuff, I realized that me swearing that dictated for the next 10 years of my life how I operated and treated people. Because I signed that contract not with God, because God would be like, hey, you don't have to swear that. Like, that you never even had to commit to that. But because I committed to that, it dictated how I treated people. It dictated who I let in, who I didn't. It dictated how if somebody came at me cross, it was an immediate, you're gone, bye, see you later, cut out. You don't even exist to me. You know, there were so many things that one false self, that my false self embraced that. Like, it was a badge of honor.
The wounding things that happened really created then the false self persona, and it's understandable. That's a horrible story. That's so hard. And so of course you come away with, I will never let myself get hurt like that again. I will never. So when you wall off, you know, that kind of part of your heart for protection, well,
come on,
nobody's going to get in. Nobody's going to get through. And so how do you really process that kind of pain, that kind of grief, that kind of sadness, that kind of, it sounds like almost torture, you know, that kind of wounding.
It was absolute torture because, like you said, nobody gets in, but the reality is nobody gets out either.
Right.
You wall yourself up like that. And guys that are listening, if you've got a wound like that, and maybe it's not as extreme as mine, but maybe there's a wound that you've dealt with where your dad hurt you, your mom hurt you, somebody hurt you, an uncle did something to you, whatever it is. When you wall yourself up like that, nobody else gets in, but you also don't get out. You built your own prison. And I didn't realize that for so long, Michael. It was so, like I said, pre-thank you and post-thank you, because literally going through it, I was like, holy crap. I built my own prison, put myself in it, and I thought it was a good thing. Yeah. Only to find out years later, hey, I needed to tear these walls down for me to actually come out of there and begin to heal from this and to move on. And I know for everybody listening, guys, you got heart wounds. I know you do.
We compare it to the NFL, which there's 100% injury rate in the NFL.
is that really? Oh my goodness.
These guys got some of their injuries in high school and in college, and they bring them in.
Yep.
You know, so some of the nagging stuff, but then, you know, when you like battering rams, you know, knock your head, 52 to 56 plays if you're on offense, you're some plays a game, you are just yeah, you, it's going to leave a mark, as Tommy Boy says, right? And so this
idea, not here, yeah, right, yeah, here.
So it's really very, very, to your point earlier, you don't get through this life without being hit.
No.
And without being wounded, without somebody. And yes, our mom and dad, you know, I get it. They did the best they could, but they, if you really will look honestly and, mm-hmm. and with some integrity in your story, you know, and you may not see it at first, you know, it may just be too difficult to, the idea that you're throwing mom and dad under the bus, but I'm saying mm-hmm. the enemy is too good at this.
Way too
good.
And the game is
too hard to not be hit and not take on the wounds of conditional love or the pain of rejection. And I think it's C.S. Lewis who talks about, you know, this beautiful idea that, you know, if you don't want to be vulnerable, then, you know, lock your heart up in a box and tuck mm-hmm. it away. But in the darkness of mm-hmm. that box, you'll die, is what he says. You built a coffin already. Yeah. And so why do you want to help the enemy do that? And yet I think in my life and journey, like we said earlier, I've been used by the enemy, and the enemy's used me to wound, you know, because wounding hearts. Mm. So to get free, to get that kind of, you call it treatment, you know,
yeah.
get in there with the trainers, man, and get some treatment on that elbow, that knee, that part of your heart that has been hit. Because a story like yours, you know, Rory, there's no way there's not shame involved, embarrassment, fear. And those aren't just emotions. I'm just going to get out, since you said, let's get real.
Let's get real.
Those are spirits. Those are demonic spirits.
Yep.
Of shame, guilt, fear, accusation, diminishment. And so when we start to really look at how this game is played, and men mm-hmm. don't know,
come on,
how they don't monitor any thoughts they have. They don't, there's no security system on their heart, then they're they're just subject to anything that flows, anything that flies, anything that the enemy wants to do to them, because they really don't know how to defend themselves. And that's really a sad way to play, when the false self is the enemy's inside thing. It's, I was going to say an inside man, not a man. It's not you.
No, it's not you.
It's not, but it will pose and it will play as you with all of those intricate, you know, elements to it. Yep. And you're in there. The wild thing, Matt, is you're in there. It's the false self that's just kind of tangled up. If you've ever seen you know, something with just, that's just really tangled up in a snare. Well, it's in there. You just got to get this thing out, this off of you. I've seen the animals that kind of marine animals that come into a boat and there's a net on them.
A gill net.
They take it off.
Yeah. Gill net.
They take it off. Tortoise, or they take it, the sea turtle, they take it off of the dolphin, they take it off, you know, and to get that stuff cut off and cut out is such a relief, you know. And it wasn't necessarily that he was looking for a gill net, and just like pornography, or just like, you know, any kind of abuse that found us in our story,
mm-hmm.
most 8-10-year-olds aren't looking for pornography.
No.
It finds them. You know, and it finds that just the wildest and craziest places, you know, whether it's
in the middle of the woods.
In the woods.
Literally.
Under dad's side of the bed.
Yeah.
You lost your baseball. You go under there and whoa.
Literally, you know? I was out in the woods with my best friend Dustin. We were 13 years old. I remember this. I hate the fact that I remember it, but I remember when that entered, because we were out in the woods where we were like sword fighting with sticks and having adventures. It was awesome. And then like Dustin was like, dude, what's that on the ground? And I'm like, I don't know. And it was like a Hustler mag or something like that. And then from that moment on, it was like, how the heck did we just walk upon it? Come on. No, it just happened to be there. Nah, it was a setup from the beginning.
Yeah, Michael, with the enemy just always at work and always trying to attack men, and like we said, these wounds, they come 100% injury rate. How do we as men begin to overcome them and take that first step?
Beautiful question. So it's the physical realm and the spiritual realm are connected. Mm-hmm. So I'm just gonna answer your question with my knee. Okay, so wear and tear on my knee got to a place when I was 50. I couldn't stand anymore. The pain was too much.
Oh wow!
And so I go to the orthopedic, and you know what he's going to do? He sticks his thumb in it. Is this where it hurts? Yes. You know, exactly where it hurts. And then you get X-rays.
Yep.
Then you get some X-rays. Then you get an MRI, and you find out that you tore your MCL maybe 4 or 5 years ago. You've been playing, you've been running, you've been doing all your activities probably without an MCL and it's just now the nerves are flared, and that's why it's so bad. So back to your question. So, you know, Jesus said that he came for the sick. And he said that to the Pharisees, who probably didn't know he was talking about them. And that's where a man has his worst and greatest moment, when he really realizes, I need help. I can't keep doing this. I can't keep looking at this, or I can't keep choosing this, as if they were really even choosing. You know, it's got such a hold on.
Come on.
So Matt, question. I think the cry for help is a legitimate part of a beginning. And then I think Jesus says, okay, I can work with that. I can work with that. And it begins to bring the assets and the relationships. And it may not be the next day, but the thing that a man can do is, I believe, to see it. You know, again, and if you're dealing with the symptoms of pain, that's different than the cause of my pain.
Mm-hmm.
The cause of my pain is no MCL. And so, but the symptoms, you know, feel like, you know, they're altogether something else. So if you're dealing with sin, what you were saying, Rory, you're really kind of dealing too far downstream. You got to go up. What is it I'm believing about myself or about this thing?
Yep.
And when you start to kind of become not self-diagnosive, but I do think when you start to become an observer of your life,
yep,
and you even observe the thoughts that you have, and you start taking some notes, I mean, like literally, not mentally, you start taking some and begin to enter into that inventory that you're talking about. I mean, AA has this stuff. Recovery communities get it. They do this.
Yeah.
We just, the rest of us don't, and we should.
Well, and most of us are running around fully addicted to so many different, we think just because our addiction doesn't impact our life, supposedly, or it's not altering our mind and causing us to lose our job or something, we're like, oh, well, we're fine. No, you're most men are functioning addicts in all kinds of different areas, whether that's addiction to a substance, whether that's addiction to pornography, whether that's an addiction to overworking, whether that's an addiction to avoidance, we are addicted to a lot of things, and we embrace these things as like, well, this is part of me. And it's like, no, you that is not even, that is just something you do, and it's not even close to a part of you.
It's a great point. I mean, the wild thing about addiction is we're made for it. We're made to worship. We're made to worship, and our desires are in and of themselves good. And again, like C.S. Lewis says, it's where we take them that is where the bad comes.
Yeah,
badness. Lewis says badness is only corrupt goodness. So, you know, our desires to be seen, to be wanted, to be valued, to belong,
mm-hmm.
Those are good. It's where you take them and how you take them to the world and to other image bearers that will disappoint. And so I think of the subtlety of, you know, alcoholism, drug use, porn use. I mean, mm-hmm. I want to categorize those as deeper waters of addiction. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you something I had to recover from, codependency.
Oh.
Where my worth and my value is based on you and Matt and Rory's opinion of me.
Man, you just killed like half of our listener base right there.
Including myself.
Line it up, boys.
Yeah. My desire to be thumbs up, to be liked, to be shared, to be approved, you know, that, but long before Facebook and all the social media. I mean, the reason that those things work is because that's how we're wired.
It plays into it.
It's right there. And so I just believe deeply that it's some of these real subtle, fear, guilt, and shame have voices.
Yeah.
My true self has a voice. False self has a voice. The Father has a voice. Spirit.
Yeah.
And so we just have a much more crowded heart and mind than we ever want to admit. And I think back, Matt, to your question, you've got to start seeing some of this stuff. You have. I mean, if until you do, you won't.
Yeah.
And I love the film The Matrix. One of my favorite stories about how this works. You know, red pill, blue pill.
Yep.
Neo, I'm offering you the truth. That's all I'm offering. And he gets unplugged from the matrix, right? Unplugged the world that the agents and that all of this war is tangled up in. And he becomes a new man. He becomes a new creation. He becomes something else. So I think that even when you do that, you get unplugged when you become a citizen of the kingdom and you get your birthright, you're going to have to protect it and you're going to have to fight
because
the war's not over. Now the war's changed. And the idea is to, because they've lost you once, what they really want to do is somehow get you inactive, POW. And that's where I think we're all the way back to the first of our conversation, right, guys, where, there's just not enough separation between the sons of God and everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have yet come into or grown into our armor, grown into our swords, grown into this space of kindness and love and strength. You know, I love what you guys said. You know, about it's not, you know, toxic masculinity. It's absent masculinity. Yeah. What's the tagline on the website again? It's your website.
Your masculinity is not toxic. It's missing.
It's missing. Yeah. So we have men that weren't initiated, weren't validated. And I think that's so much of what I've experienced God doing in my life over the last 20 years. Is initiating and validating me as a man, giving me names, showing me things about how the kingdom works.
Mm-hmm.
Just the other night, back to real examples, two quick things about, so the false self, I still have one. I hope it's in the cage most of the time. I hope it's in the trunk most of the time. And that I can live more true self. So I'm going to pick up Robin, my wife. She's coming back from a visit where she saw one of our kids in Atlanta. She's flying in, and the flight's delayed. It happens all the time. 11 o'clock, now it's 7:30, now it's 11:50. I'm old, man. I'm 59. I'm older. So, I know what Uber looks like there at our Raleigh-Durham airport. It's not good.
So
I don't want her to do that. So I'm going to go get her. Which was the plan anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm going, and sometime between my house and the airport, in those 20 minutes, the spirit of irritation is just kind of like, you remember the green gas in Batman, the old Batman, The old Batman. Green Gas kind of comes in. Are you guys old enough to see the like Adam West?
Oh, come on, man. I ain't that young.
Okay.
Matt is, but so I'm not.
Green Gas comes in the truck, and it's this, yeah. And I'm going to give a name. It's a spirit of irritation. And yeah, I'm breathing it. I don't know where my Batman is. I'm not counting it a privilege to go get her. I'm not playing the rescuer. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go get my girl, and I'm going to get her out of there and get her home safe. You know, yep. I am. Oh my gosh, what's this guy doing on the road? And so that's how you tumble. That's how you start to fall into space. It's just that subtle. So by the time I pick her up, she wasn't out at the curb like she said. It's fine, but it's just adding to my.
And it's just spiraling out of control by this point.
Right. So by the time she gets in the car in the truck, and I get her bag, and I am just not in a good space.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. No, I mean, flights happen to be delayed all the time. And, you know, my wife is home now after 3.5 days. So we're halfway home, and we've had a couple conversations back and forth. And she says, "You seem a little irritated." And what was beautiful, instead of going, "I'm not irritated. You know, I'm not."
Yo.
I said, "You know what, hon? I kind of am, and I shouldn't be. I'm sorry." Mm. Honey, it was like smelling salts. It was just,
oh yeah.
You know, and again, we know that you're going to have, if you get home at 12:30 rather than 11, you're going to have to recover the next day, the older you get. But that's, I'm just saying, just because I know what I know and have experienced what I experienced, man, doesn't mean I can't be subject again to some of this crap. You know, it's just, I'm saying you've got to have your wits about you. But if you don't know what something is and you can't stop,
how are you going to fight flow, it?
You can't fight it.
If you don't know what it is or why it's there, there's no way to actually attack an enemy you can't see.
Yeah. I think that's
go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think that's so important, being able to discern. And that comes with the training of knowing God's voice, knowing the Holy Spirit's voice, knowing when the enemy's trying to attack you. And also that personally, that's something that I'm struggling with right now, and kind of why I'm going. Roy likes to use the term the washing machine cycle.
Mm.
So you kind of get out of it a little bit, you know, you start trusting God a little more, and then the enemy kind of puts you right back in there. And it's kind of this loop that I'm constantly in, and being able to really get myself to fully trust in God.
And we're going to go through many more of them. That what you just described is not something to be avoided. It's something to be entered into, Matt, truly. It's the way it works. You're gonna be in training and in that washing machine. You're gonna be, you know, learning how to defend yourself, and then you're deployed into real life moments, real life circumstances. And the best moment is when you're in that space, when you're in the truck, and you see it. That's when I get excited for any man who's like, "Wait a minute, this is not me."
Yeah,
I see. That the whole war just changed in that moment for that guy when he starts to see it for himself and begins to have not only those revelations that come, but then revelations kind of get filed into what's called wisdom. And now you are learning how to walk it. Now you're learning how to guard your heart. Now you're learning how to defend against false accusations that you're an idiot. Or you're not enough, or this is going to happen again. I mean, we just so much communication propaganda from the enemy in that. Yeah, we won't be able to stand firm against the devil and his schemes. Right, and he'll flee because it won't work. And that's the day of war changes, the battle changes for a man's heart and his identity, even in the kingdom, you know. And we see this in the stories that we tell and the journeys that we're so fond of, you know, that we watch, whether it's, you know, galaxies far, far away, you know, or it's in Middle Earth, or in Narnia, or, you know, in the Wild West, you know, all the characters seem to be going through this loop, like of, you know, falling,
yeah,
discovering, overcoming, becoming, and, you know, by the end of the film, yeah, they're different than they were, you know, and I think, and this is true of each chapter in our story. So I think, Matt, you're in a good place, man. That's not a bad cycle. If I understand what you're saying, it's a required cycle.
Mm. You got to go through those cycles multiple times over and over. I can get you, Michael, on the left lane stuff, man. Oh my goodness. When that Prius is on the left lane doing 65 and the speed limit 70, I'm like, you will die. Like, I lose my mind sometimes. And it's so, oh my goodness. Like, and sometimes, like you said, it's like, I don't even know why I'm doing this. Like, just wait till he gets out of the way or go around him. Why are you wasting getting all worked up about it? And then you just drive him fast and probably end up getting a ticket anyways. But like, yeah, I wish that, you know, I was better than that, but I fell victim to that one quite a bit. The little road rage is like, yeah, it definitely happens. I usually keep it in my car, but I will, oh man, I will unhinge and go close to just letting go. It's like, what the heck? But it's that spiraling too, like you're talking about. This happened, that happened. And usually, I'm just going to go out on a limb, by the time you're road raging on somebody, you already had the worst day ever, and it's been building up for hours and hours and hours and hours, and now, boom, gotcha.
Yeah. It's just another couple ounces that are going to make a pound, and you're going to take it out on some probably on home front. Yeah.
And I think a lot of guys can relate to that. I mean, any human being is like, you're always going to have weight. And I think with guys, you have a tendency to, well, I have to be stronger. I have to take this. I have to deal with it. I'm the one that's going to be responsible for it. And guys, eventually you're just going to put so much on you that you're not able to carry it. And then you're going to break. And then you're going to be like, why can't I carry this? I'm obviously not strong. And it's just, again, that's your false self speaking these lies about, oh, well, you should have been that strong. Well, no, we're not perfect. We're not even close to it.
No, yeah. the grace is when that breaks, like you said. I mean, and yet if you interpret it as your fault or somehow, you know, take self condemnation for that. Right. So when things like that finally do break or break down, like you said, Rory, that's actually that's a moment where this way doesn't work. I mean, we were talking about kind of living in the smaller story and how that's the gravitational pull of life outside the garden is to a smaller story where the story is about you.
That's right.
You were just describing it, Roy. The story's about you. It's up to you. That's the smaller story. And that is, there's something in this fallen world in the spiritual gravity of it that is trying to pull us into that narrative. So that, again, if you don't see that and how it's working, then you're going to be subject to it or even a victim of it.
Yeah.
And unless you begin to realize that, that doesn't have to have sway. That doesn't have to have authority on me. And that's not true. Life is not up to me. But, you know, now you're swimming upstream to those places that, well, who told you that it was?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not a person, right? Sometimes it's a story that happened to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think every man, I've not met one yet that hasn't had some scene in his life, in the history of his life, that the conclusion wasn't, I'm on my own.
Yeah.
Jeez. And so now, whether that happens to you when you're 8 or 9 because dad left, or no, dad stayed home and you wish he would have left, or... you know, or what, or 14 or 16, all men at some point all men at some point have a scene or we'll call it a couple pages in their biography, in mm-hmm. their story, where that was the conclusion. And that is a moment that the enemy swoops in and then begins, you know, Matt, to take you into this life is up to you.
Yeah.
If it's going to be, it's up to me, you know, and all of the things that come along with that. What's supposed to happen is at a certain stage in our life, we're supposed to be by a father particularly, or by the company of other men, we're actually supposed to be released into that space where, hey, you are now responsible for you and your heart mm-hmm. against the enemy and to stay aligned with God, like we've talked to you. So it's not life's up to you, but it's this graduation to life is for you. And we commit you into that. How many men have had that moment? I mean, I don't know any. And we're trying to work a way to really kind of recreate some of those moments of graduation, of ceremony, you know. And I think some other camps and some other conferences, some other retreats are doing that. And men are responding because men are so hungry for that kind of.
They're so far outside of it. They're so far lost and so far gone. And I think that the inner cry of every single man on the face of the planet is looking to find out, am I a good man? And what kind of man am I? Because you ask yourself that question. It's one thing to ask other people, and they're going to give you that feedback. If you want to be really brave, ask your kids and your wife. I remember years and years and years ago, super quick story, I sat down at the table with my 13-year-old son, Cohen, and I said, hey, I got to ask you a question, and I don't want an answer that you're going to give me out of fear of punishment. I just want you to give me the guts. Am I a good father? And what came out of my son's mouth put me into a puddle of tears on the table, because up until that point, I did not believe that I was a good father. And my son said, oh, you got your issues, Dad, but you love me. You care for me. You're teaching me how to be a man. And I'm like, I didn't even know. I had no clue. Yeah. But if I hadn't sat down and asked him, and the same goes for ourselves, like ask yourself, men, are you? Are you a good man? Are you the man that you think you could be? And then where are you pulling all of the parameters on what kind of man you should be? If you're not pulling that from your creator, you have a distorted and deceptive view of who you should be.
I was going to say it best, but worst. I don't know if it's best or worse. You're going to be subject to the opinions.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
And what you're saying is, and I appreciate, is what if the opinion that matters most is God's? And, you know, I had to overcome some pretty serious religious baggage, Rory, because I had made agreements that God wasn't close, and he didn't speak, and if he did, it wasn't going to be good. If he did, it wasn't going to be good, because so.
Yeah,
so,
Michael, do you mind telling that the basketball story real quick when you were shooting in the gym late at night?
Yeah. Well, it's funny, just in this moment, as you bring that up, Matt, that story was very true. That's what I did with seminary. You know, it was an idea of getting back in the gym and shooting and you know, getting in seminary and learning more. So anyway, very interesting that you brought that story up. Just a connection point for me right now. Thank you for bringing it up. So the story I tell was in college. I think it was my junior year. I was playing a lot more and getting to start. And then I started kind of losing my position, my role that I'd fought so hard to earn. And it just put me in a spin. So you do what you know to do as an athlete. You just go do more, you know? So late one night I was in the gym shooting extra and trying harder and you were talking about this earlier, you know, trying harder, training more. And because my worth was so connected to this game and the levels of what I'd say, the levels of affection that I felt when it was going well. So it wasn't going well, like you said, Matt, in the story. And so I end up, of course, in the gym, I'm shooting and I'm knocking down jumpers, you know, one after the other. And it's getting actually frustrating. And so this deep pain, this sadness, this frustration all kind of accumulates. And I end up sitting on the side up against the bleachers. And I cry out, you know, I've given this game so much. I love this game so much. And the next thing I think I said, Matt, or the next thought I had was, yeah, but it doesn't love you back.
And then I
really started crying. And because it was just an honest moment. And there I was, kind of filleted. It was unveiled. And my worth and identity as a person was just, it was so tangled up in that game. And it could be any, I mean, you could substitute so many things in there in men's lives, you know, for that particular, for basketball. Their families, their marriages, I mean, good things, right? Good things. But, oh my gosh, it was just one of the tender ways that God was going to kind of deal with my heart. And it took some more years before I got some real separation from that, some real relief from that. But that was one big installment. I think that's the story talking about, Matt.
Yeah. I read it the other day just because I read it over and over and over again, those few pages.
You should just take those pages out and hang them on your wall, bud.
Because I went through something very similar. I played college baseball, wasn't playing my first couple of years, really was struggling mentally, and went to psychologist and everything, just tried to fix it. And I just eventually, my identity was so wrapped up in, you are a baseball player, this is who you are, this is all you'll ever be, this is all you know. And when my career ended, when I was 22 years old, I played like 3 weeks for a cup of coffee in the independent league, and great and all, but after that I was like, well, what do I do now? I have no idea what I'm doing now. And you know, obviously fast forward several years later, and you know, God's kind of called me into this podcast and reaching other men and just being bringing other men into his kingdom. So I just wanted to share that and just let you know, thank you again for sharing that story, just because it resonated so much.
Yeah, Matt, we're all being trained, right? We just didn't know it. You know, we didn't know that we were, you know, instead of being, we talk about, you know, being dangerous men for good. And I think that's what you guys are really about too, is to be a dangerous man, really for good. But, you know, I did not know how much training was taking place, by the unholy Trinity, right?
In the wrong direction.
And what's beautiful is as much as we don't want that kind of pain or bankruptcy or you know, to lose ourselves in some of those spaces, that can be the beginning of something, you know, a road back, you know, from, I mean, and sports is not bad in of itself, Matt, you know, it was just part of that false self space, and my true self was in there. You know, I mean, I learned a ton through those high school and college years. But when I look back at my wounded journal, brothers, I mean, basketball wounded the crap out of me, and the,
yeah,
not game. I'm talking about coaches.
Yep.
And I mean, there was some times you talk about being in the fast lane, wanting to kill somebody. I mean, I was at mid court. Draymond Green has nothing on me, man. I mean, I carried some of that crap with me in high school and college and, you know, practices that, you know, and so anyway, I mean, that anger is going to, that frustration, that sadness is going to go somewhere. And even if you think you're shoving it deep, it's toxic. So I think relationally, you know, we're inviting men to process some things that maybe it's 30 years old or 40 years old in them. Yep. But what if it's in a file somewhere and that file is leaking and it's affecting relationship as a husband, as a father? It's leading to isolation. It's turning them, you know, into this creature that they weren't meant to be. And that's what I think, you know, why I wrote Heart of a Warrior. I think other authors have written through their experience. Other authors write about their experience. And that was the same for me, you know. So Heart of a Warrior was very much about getting free from this creature that had a really dominant presence, even as a Christian and even as a, you know, ministry guy. It wasn't good, and the false self never ever is. And so, but it's the thing that the enemy has working on the inside. It's the false self, that thing that, and you're responsible for it. You know, I think
that's
I put
right.
in the heart,
that's right.
hardware, your dog bites somebody, you're responsible for that. So,
that's a great way to look at it, Michael. If your dog, so if you're walking your dog, if you're walking your dog and he bites somebody,
big enough dog, it's walking you.
Yeah,
right?
Most of the time our dog's walking us, if we be honest, man.
Yeah.
Our dog's walking us, and then we bite and we're like, well, it's your fault. No, that's our fault.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I hate to do this, but we do got to wrap up. I'm going to have you on 34 times after this. I don't even care. The next 14 episodes, let's go. I hate to do it, but man, one, just thank you, Michael, for taking the time to get real with us, to talk through these things, because I think these are major, major issues that guys we deal with, we deal with on a major level. And one of the things, again, I just want to recommend you guys get his book, The Heart of a Warrior. Go through it. Get a journal. Get the study guide. Yeah, go through it. Do the heart work. And you'll be able to get to a place, I promise you, because I've gone through it and still going through it. It's a process. We're never finished. But guys, you need to know who you are, because when you genuinely discover who you are and who God says you are going to be the most dangerous that you can ever be. And the more you remove that enemy, right, Michael, the more you take out that false self, the more and more dangerous you become. Again, not dangerous for bad, dangerous for good. But that's where I truly believe that every man wants to be, is that optimal, hey, I know who I am, I know who made me, I know why, and I am now in a place where I can actually, instead of being that cocky false self, I can be a very confident true self.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. I'd just love for you to have the last words or prayer or any inspiration words of advice for our men just send us out of here.
Yeah. Well, oh, man. What lands on me when you ask me that is the tagline in Heart of a Warrior, the subtitle, right, is before you can become the warrior, you have to become the beloved son.
Yes.
And so I would say to all of your and our friends and allies out there that letting God love you and receiving love from God, that do whatever you blow up the dams, you know, get whatever you got to get that flow moving.
Yeah.
And trade up service for God, for intimacy with God. And that's what you were made for.
That's right.
That's what he wants. You know, he wants to be in love with you. And that's why there's redemption. That's why there's, and restoration. It's all about God wanting and desiring us and to be in love with us and to experience a love relationship. And from there and getting that, you know, Matt, in its right space, it just makes all the difference in now the enemy really can't offer me much.
That's right.
He's still pretty good. He's a trickster. Jesus said he's the father of lies. But once you practice this for a couple years, and I hope that's not discouraging.
It takes time.
Yeah, if it took 30 years to train you in the ways of, you know, false self dominance, it's going to take a few years to get
to untrain. Really, yeah.
Those wounds and agreements that we talked about earlier that form the false self, it's not like you go toe to toe with the false self. Where you go, right, Matt, is toe to toe with the lies that you've believed.
That's right.
And if you can get those turned in and say, Jesus, I don't believe this anymore. I turn it in.
That's right.
This, what do you say about me? Or what do you say about this? Or where were you when this happened? Ooh,
that's a really good question, guys.
Just let him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, where were you? Like, you really want to challenge yourself? That's a question, because I promise you, watch it. He's going to answer you, and it'll change everything for you when you realize in the middle of your pain where Jesus was, and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a game changer right there, Michael. Whew.
Yeah. So I think, letting God love you in and through that mess, and we're all in recovery to some degree, and to enter into that is really, that's so courageous, men who step in that direction. And it's messy. If there was a formula I could give them, Matt, do this, this, and this.
Yeah, that'd be awesome, right?
drink this, you know.
take Jesus this. Influencer.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so my goodness.
But I would say you can do this. Yeah. I would want every man to know that God's with you, for you, and you can do this. You do your part.
That's right.
Do everything you can, do your part, and let him do his part. And I think that's where the magic will happen. And it'll take a little time, and he's up to good. He's up to good. He promises. Take him up on the promise. He's up to good. So that's my commitment. Thanks for asking.
Amen.
It's good.
Hey, Michael. Great to be with you. Thank you so much, man. We appreciate you sharing with the guys and talking with us today. It was an honor, man. And guys, in the show notes, there's going to be links to the books. There's going to be links to Zoe and links to get more information where you guys can find Michael.
Thank you for listening to the Dangerous Man Podcast. If you could, man, subscribe to the show today. Do not miss another episode. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. We love you and we thank you, men, for all that you're doing to grow and continue to challenge and change yourself while sharing the show with others. If you could, jump on Apple or Spotify or Google or wherever you listen to your juicy audio podcast and leave us a review. Let us know how the show has helped you, how we could do better, anything that you want. We want your input, men. Please leave us a review and let us know how we're doing. And also, if you're on Spotify, go into Spotify on these single episodes and you can click in there, and we have questions specifically for you about that episode. We want to hear from you, men. Jump on there. And last but not least, let's not let Dangerous Man be the best kept secret. Share the show, men. You can do it. It's a simple text message. Shoot it out to your friend and let them know it's time to stop trying and start training to be the man that you were designed to be.